And then I just happened to hear from one of them. He said, oh, yeah, I came to the first meeting and we did like that activity. And the meeting was very cathartic for me. I thought that's a big word. And I was really happy that it happened for that person. And then I heard another story about a man. I was his listener, actually, in the recent session. And yeah, he talked and he was so happy to talk. So I thought, oh, maybe, you know, teachers just don't get to talk.
Hello and welcome to ELT WTF. This is the first episode of Season 2, which means there'll be new episodes every Saturday for the next 6 weeks or so. This week, WTF stands for Why Talk Reflectively. I'm joined by Anna Losova. Anna is a teacher currently based in Tokyo. She has been organizing reflective practice meetings in Tokyo for a long time. I mostly know Anna because we've organized an alternative ELT conference called Excite ELT together twice. By the way, this conference is returning to Tokyo on the 12th of May, and the call for sessions is still open as I record this. If you're interested, check out www.exciteelt.com. The link is in the show notes. It's a really fun and social conference, and I think if you enjoy this show, you'll probably enjoy that too. When you're organizing a conference, you're often too busy to make much small talk. There's lots of questions about reflective practice and conference going that I wanted to ask Anna, and I finally got the chance to in this interview. However, another thing I never got around to finding out from Anna was the story of how she started teaching, so I began the interview there.
I got my degree from Moscow City Pedagogical University in 2008 as an English teacher. And by that time in the university, we had to do the obligatory practicum in schools for like a year and 2 months at within two different years. So when I first started my practicum, somehow I really enjoyed it, being in school for the first month, even though I had originally no intention to be a teacher. I just wanted to study English, be in the English surrounding, but I didn't want to be a teacher. But the first time in the classroom, I loved it so much, somehow, that I got myself a job while I was still a university student. I went to a school in the neighborhood where I lived and just asked them to hire me. And so for 2 years, as I was still a university student, I was working in that school. And by the time I got my diploma from university, I already had a burnout from being a teacher in that school. So that was really interesting development of events. Like, I just got my diploma and I'm supposed to be a teacher, but I feel like I don't know if I want to be doing it. I worked for a couple more months in that school and then I quit. And then I thought, okay, I'm just going to take a break, maybe look for other jobs, even though I don't really know what I can do. I'm 22. I know some English. I can teach, but I don't really know what I want to be doing. So I went to a couple of interviews to be an assistant someone, and I hated it so much. Just the mere idea and the interviews and the like the business side of things. Just seeing people sitting in the offices did not look attractive to me. So I just thought, okay, it's fine. Then I'll just be doing this. And I started working. But I knew for sure that I didn't want to return to school. So I was working freelance for different companies through a mediator company. So they found me different jobs. Teaching English, business English, and general English, and kind of tailor-made courses that these people, the groups, wanted. Teaching to adults. So that was really interesting for me. And like, because I was free compared to what I had to do in school, I started to get there.
And what was it about the schools that made you feel so burned out?
I don't know, just the stifling atmosphere, I guess. It felt to me like working in school is like going down deep in the bog, you know what I mean? Like from year to year, you have to teach students. And then I feel like many teachers probably feel like, I can't quit now because I've been teaching this group of students since they were 11, you know, now I want to see them graduate. And then there's more, and then there's more, and there's next year is always fresh students, and you get to... It's like the cycle that you cannot really ever get out of if you want to. I feel like, I don't know, and also the authority of school studies in that particular school. She was a very mean person. I didn't like the way she treated teachers. And I did not agree with she structured everything very rigidly, you know. So anyway, I'm not a school, I don't have the school spirit, you know. in that school when I first started. I was like 20 years old, and I was really fresh, and I had ideas of which textbooks would be better for the students to make a change, you know. And I think probably she didn't like that. Yeah, I guess just being a freelance and being and having some freedom is very, very important for me. I got a job in the Moscow State University teaching students of physics, which was great luck and really, really amazing job. I really liked it because students were so smart. And anyway, and I had all the freedom in the world. And I could start some initiatives and write materials for the students, and it was really, really great. My boss supported me in everything I wanted to do. So for 5 years, I worked there freelance as well. And then in 2013, I came to Japan for a JAL conference together with the ITDI team, Barbara Sakamoto, and all the great people of ITDI. It was a six-day trip that was JAL in Kobe. And I was just out of 6 days of that trip, for 4 days, I was at the conference. So I really saw Japan for 2 days. But somehow I felt really belonging here at that time. And the fact that I met so many teachers that I had previously met online, and also new teachers, new friends, and everybody was so super friendly. And it was the first time when I didn't want to go back home from a trip. It was a revelation. And then Barb said, well, you can find a job here, you know, you don't have to, you can return. And that was the first time I ever thought of, oh yeah, you know, it's actually possible. I never even had it in my mind that I could be working as an English teacher outside of Russia, because that's not some experience that I saw my friends having or anybody from Russian teachers having. So this idea didn't even cross my mind before that. But then when I came back, I started my search and just really dedicated myself to getting the job, because I think when you make a goal, and it's possible. Within a year, in April 2015, I was in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm. So how long have you been involved doing reflective practice stuff?
Yeah, so the community, which means monthly reflective practice meetings that I organize, has been going since April 2016, so... But before that, I think as soon as I started blogging, maybe a few months after I started blogging, and I found, which is 2011, and then I found blogs like Gisette LeBlanc's blog, Mike's blog, Anne's blog, John Ford Rescher's blog, and maybe you can link all of those. Just that blogging community was the start when I think I realized what it is, or started getting an idea of what it is, and that it's interesting and it's kind of up my alley, you know. Maybe 2012 or 11 is the start of it.
And how do you kind of learn to do this?
Through the blogs. I just read what people write about it. Gisette had great posts about their meetings. Also John Ford Drescher, back in 2014 or 13 maybe, he had on his blog, he had a reflective practice challenge, like an organized way of doing reflective practice through blog posts, with like guidelines what each blog post is about. And lots of people participated in that, and I kind of started only but I read everything, so I guess through observation.
And so when you go to a like reflective practice session, can you tell me a little bit more about what that looks like?
I don't really know what it's supposed to be look like, and I think it's going to be different in all those reflective practice groups around, but I don't really go to the meeting because I organize the meeting, so it's in my mind what it's going to look like. I have to decide what it's going to look like. And I guess my idea of a meeting comes from a meeting that I attended back in 2014 when I was traveling in Korea. And I went to Daegu to see Gisette, and she invited me to attend the meeting that they were having from the Daegu RP meeting. And there was in a cafe, I don't remember, maybe 8-9 people came. And so I sat through one of those meetings, and I think that was really good for me because I got an understanding of what it actually looks like. People talk, and I don't even remember what we talked about. But yeah, I guess that gave me an idea that it's not really super structured, and we can just chat, you know, and but chat with a facilitator with a certain line of what we're doing. So in my mind, when I plan a meeting, really, because I think I have too many interests in ELT, and I go to different sessions and conferences, and I talk about this a lot with different people. So I always have tons of themes that I want to talk about in RP meeting. It's the meetings in the beginning, 3 years ago. They started from the basics of going through experiential learning cycle, which we've been doing that a lot. Then we kind of moved into investigating emotion part of it. And then we turned our attention more into the listening part. So reflective practice being that you have to describe or tell about the story, that whatever thing we're talking about or a classroom incident. But the being the listener is the most important and the most difficult job very often, because we didn't want to give advice to each other and help out very actively. You know, it's like, oh, I've been in that situation. Let me tell you what I've done. That's great, but that's kind of, we're trying to move away from it. And because it's not the purpose of what those meetings are. We want to be truly there for the person who wants to explore how to solve a certain problem in that situation, which we cannot be in. We can just listen and, I don't know, with some kind of helpful questions, guide, but we don't even know we're guiding somewhere. Recently, for the past year, this kind of work on being a good listener and what it means to be a good listener when we talk about certain different topics has been the focus.
So you usually wouldn't try and give someone advice?
Usually not, unless a person really asks, okay, so I really have nothing, no idea what to do, could you please tell me? So unsolicited advice, no thank you.
And so what do you think people get from an RP session?
That's also a good question, because there have been times when I don't really know who's coming, and the attendees, the attendance is not very consistent, except for me and a couple of other people who come more or less regularly, but it's really tough for me to plan in that regard, you know. But a couple of times recently, actually, when new people joined the meetings, and then I just happened to hear from one of them, he said, oh yeah, I came to the first meeting, and we did like that activity, and the meeting was very cathartic for me. I thought that's a big word, and I was really happy that it happened for that person. And then I heard another story about a man. I was his listener, actually, in the recent session. And, yeah, he talked, and he was so happy to talk. So I thought, oh, maybe, you know, teachers just don't get to talk a lot about, in the way they just want to tell their stories about their life, work experiences, all their troubles. And the theme of that meeting was fears and concerns that we have at the moment. So that was very personal, but also, of course, related to work. And I don't know, it was just very nice to see a person so happy. And then after, he said that he slept so well the next day.
Oh, that's nice. And have you had any kind of personal moments when you've had like a big penny drop in a reflective practice session?
But basically, each time, every single time I come out of the RP meeting, I go home and I want to write a blog post about it, because my head is filled with ideas. My notebook is filled with like notes of what people said and what that made me think of, some kind of, not conclusions, but like, whoa, insights. But they're different each time in that, oh, it's really difficult to listen to people and not say anything, for example. I think I might be overgeneralizing, but when I was in Russia, this kind of communication that I've had was, whatever you say something to a person, especially if you're talking about a problem, I don't know, I'm feeling a little sick now, but I have to go to work, for example. and then you're bound to have all sorts of statements on what you should do that will definitely help you in this situation. So like, this is the It won't be a thing, oh, I'm so sorry to hear about the, you look, you take care. People feel like they should give some advice, you know, and this is coming out of the best intentions of people. So that was kind of ingrained in me. That's a good thing, you know. If a person mentions a trouble, however small it is, I should say something to help. You know, this kind of support is a good thing. That's what I had for 29 years of my life in Russia. But doing these meetings and just communicating with people from different cultures here in Japan, I just came to value a different sort of communication. You know, just supporting through actually emotionally supporting, because my advice is coming from my experiences. And I think in teaching, it is this sort of advice of what I do, what kind of worksheets I'm using, how I'm dealing with the student who is talking over me. I don't know. It could be good to have that information, but we should be careful giving advice, I think.
Where could someone who's listening to this go to find out more about reflective practice?
So many places. Read some books by Thomas Farrell or articles. You don't need to read a whole book. You can just read some articles. You can read some of those blogs that I mentioned. Another blog that I failed to mention, but I should not fail. This is Zhenya Palasatova's blog. She's in the Ukraine, and she's doing RP meetings there. And she's such a great person to address about that issue, because she's a professional and a teacher trainer, so she really knows what she's doing. I really don't know what I'm doing. So there are a lot of people who have a lot of experience in this, and very, very good insights, and plan the meetings in a structured way, maybe, and reflect on the meetings a lot. I think Zhenya's blog is probably, at the moment, one of the best. I could say that go to my blog and read all about it, but I have some blog posts related to RP meetings, what we've done at them, but I don't know, go read if you want. I think there are better places to get information, because my blogs are all just my stories, you know? I don't know how interesting that could be. Especially if you really want to plan a meeting, you know?
So let's talk a little bit about conferencing as well then. Can you tell me a little bit about your conferencing experience, like from the start to now?
Yeah, this is very fun for me to to remember. My first conference was TESOL France in 2011 in Paris. And I submitted to do a poster presentation. I worked really hard. I made the poster. I printed it out in a special place, and it was really bright and beautiful. And then I left it in the baggage claim area in the airport. I picked up my suitcase and then I left the baggage area. And I forgot that I left the cube with the poster, you know, on the chair. So that was really stressful, to be honest. But anyway, it was it's a very, very memorable first conference experience, and it made me feel closer to the conference organizers who had to help me out and just tell me where I can print the poster 2 hours before the conference. My first conference was such a bar set so high for conferences that I was super, super lucky. I met some of the people from online community that I met earlier that year. And I just joined Twitter and like blogs and Facebook for ELT in 2011, in May probably, or April. And then in November, I was at the conference meeting all these people. That was absolutely amazing. So good. And it just gave me more, maybe if we remember my sad story of me not being certain that I want to be doing this just opened a huge door for me, you know, and I thought, oh, this is exactly what I want to be doing. I just want to be going to conferences as much as I can.
Right, so you've been to many conferences all around the world?
Yeah, as much as my pay in Russia can afford. I did a few presentations in some Russian conferences, and then I was in Turkey at two different conferences twice. So that's it for Europe, probably. Paris, twice in Istanbul and Russia, and then Japan and Korea. And then when I moved to Asia, that was Japan and Korea each year, almost each year. Recently, Cambodia and Thailand and Vietnam.
Can you tell me what's it like organizing a conference, or what's something people don't know about organizing a conference?
I think people just don't know that it's what it's like. How do you know unless you organize it? I don't, I think it pays to be disciplined, or as disciplined as you can be. It pays to know what's ahead. So for me, doing it the first time in Japan, it was very helpful, super helpful, absolutely necessary that you had already gone through this. You know, I can't imagine doing this from scratch like you did it the first time in Seoul. I just don't know what all those things you need to think of, but you had the kind of a list ready, and okay, we're gonna need to think about this and this and this, and this is what we start with, and so on and so forth. So I think that's an important point. If you're a person who can imagine what sort of things you need to take into consideration while planning an event like that, then good luck. Otherwise, find people who have that sort of vision, who've had certain experience, because personally, at first, I just like followed and trusted you, and then what we should be doing. And then, of course, as we started going, I had my own, I could think on my own, oh, maybe we also have to think about this side of it. And on my part, that's a lot of notebooks with notes and random thoughts that I was like, oh, maybe this, and I need to note it down and talk to you. And communication is important as well, I think. I don't know, just finding a person and being organized together and in some sort of way, it helps a lot. And also the fact that, yeah, I think conferences should have websites, right, or some sort of online presence. And I wouldn't be the person doing that, so I'm super happy that you are the person doing that. But that's so much responsibility and so much work. So this is, I think, also something to think about when, if you're planning to organize it. You know, who's going to be doing all that amount of work?
Right, okay. I think you're making me sound far more diligent than I really am. But not just when, like, building a conference, but just in general. What do you look for in an English language teaching conference?
I think now I look for sessions that are different, that are not presenting me some sort of research, just because I don't need it. It's not that it's bad. I'm not the right audience for that. I'm looking for sessions like at ExciteLT where people can talk about an issue together. They can get some sort of output by presenter, some sort of information by presenter about this topic. But in general, I don't think I need to see experts talking about things. I don't want to sound arrogant, but I just want to think on my own. At the moment, with the job that I have, I don't need any activities to solve certain like problems in class or to support my class. But that's my current situation. I'm sure when I change a job, my interests in what I look for in a conference will also change. But I wanted to make a comment before you mentioned kind of good feedback about ExciteLT conference. And just the other week, one of my friends from work who was at the recent ExciteLT in Tokyo in May, and she presented there as well. She told me, and she just told me about this now, and I was super, super happy to hear it. She said, yeah, well, this conference was really different and great experience for me. And it's like changed something in her. About conferences, about interacting with other teachers, because she said the atmosphere was amazing. There is like openness for everybody to communicate with each other. Not there is not such thing as groupings. You know, people hang out with the people they know. Or I feel like in many conferences, people just tend to hang out with the people they know, and they form this. And happy communities. And some people might feel excluded. So my friend said that this recent ExciteLT conference was just, she felt so welcome there, you know, to talk to anyone. And the format of sessions and just the format of the conference was like conducive to this feeling, which made me really happy, you know, just to feel that.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because I think first time we met was at Côte d'Essonne, and you were an invited speaker, and you came over, and I kind of knew one person who was going to the dinner with the invited speakers later. It felt very like a medieval king or something, because they had the big famous speaker who'd flown over to be there, and then some of the other invited speakers were like also in the middle of the table, and there was me right at the end of the table, kind of hanging on and trying to jump into the conversation and not really getting anywhere. So I think that's definitely true, and I think that's something we should be working towards in the future. So that's really nice to hear.
Yeah, About the invited speakers and featured speakers, I guess it's important to have. It's very important. I mean, I don't really know why we should have them, but I wish there was not such a special thing around them. You know, it's like, let's go. It's only this dinner is only for invited speakers. Or within a few months, I've been to Vietnam a couple of times, and both of these times I presented. And like once it was a conference that I applied to present for, and my first trip in March had to do with the teachers helping teachers special interest group of JAL. So it's a volunteer trip. We went to Vietnam to a couple of cities and presented some workshops for local teachers. In March with the THT, I was among the group of invited people from Japan, right? Invited guests from Japan. And we were giving so much... so many presents, so much respect. We had to sit in this at this long table in front of the stage and stand up and, you know, get the applause and things like that. It's interesting. It's in the culture of that country, I understand, and maybe in other countries and as well, not only Vietnam. But I don't know how I feel about this. I can't say that I liked it so much, you know. I think I would probably like to sit next to Vietnamese teachers and talk to them about what it's like in Vietnam. You know, it's really interesting to me what it's like teaching in those other countries. That's part of the reason, that's a big part of the reason why I came all the way to Asia from Russia, because I want to see what English classrooms are like, what the conditions are like here, you know, what students are like. Students in Japan, Korea, and Vietnam are so different, you know, so I want to talk to teachers about this. I don't want to be sitting at a table.
Thanks for listening. Next week, we'll be back with the Tefillology crew to talk about ELT podcasting. Please check out the show notes for some of the blogs Anna mentioned at www.elt.wtf. And if you're interested in the conference, that's exciteelt.com or exciteelt.com. See you next week. Wish get solid rock and roll. Wish get solid rock and roll. Wish che so del rock and roll, tu fa l'American, tu fa l'American. Wish che so del rock and roll, wish che so del rock and roll, wish che so del rock and roll.